Happy Friday, baseball friends, and welcome to the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Sylvester. This week in baseball, the All-Star rosters were announced and Johnny Cueto reached a mark that we haven't seen since 1993. On today's show, I'll be joined by Daily Fantasy Insider's co-founder and DFS superstar Justin McMahon to talk about news of the week, Friday's DFS slate, waiver wire pickups, and answer some questions from the listener mailbag. If you've been listening to the show and have a comment, please take 30 seconds to leave us a quick review at fantasypros.com/review. I've now got Justin McMahon with me, who's quickly becoming an elite fantasy sports player. He's made over 230 grand playing DFS and founded a rising website, Daily Fantasy Insider, which offers a premium DFS strategy guide that people are just raving about right now. If you're not so sure about dropping some money, at least do yourself a favor. Check out their two must-haves that they post every day, and you'll see quickly how great their content is. If you want to follow Justin on Twitter, he can be found at Justin McMahon. That's MacMahan. Justin, how's your week going?
It's going great. Last night was big. We cashed out real nicely for the second night in a row. We stacked the Rockies, which doesn't sound too original, but it worked out really well.
Yeah, I saw that you won despite whoever it was striking out five times. Who had a big night for you?
Yeah, two nights ago, I won really big, and I had Colby Rasmus, who struck out five straight at-bats, which was incredible to win so much with such a horrible pick on the team. And then last night, that was two nights ago, and then last night we had the good fortune of winning again. We went with Trevor Story, had two home runs, and Arenado, LeMahieu, Hundley, they all were big double digits. And then we went with Hill on the mound, and he pitched great against the Astros, struck out 10, got the win. So that was the big key for us. And then Nelson Cruz hit a home run pretty late to push us pretty high up in the leaderboards.
Man, Trevor Story, I tell you what, he's sure been impressive this season. I wish he would have got himself an all-star slate.
Yeah, he's been really impressive. He has 21 home runs and only 10 of them are in Coors Field. I think five of them are at Chase Field, but he's still having an amazing season. For all the people who just say, oh, well, he plays for the Rockies, he's hitting quite a bit of home runs on the road.
Yeah, and he's doing it as a shortstop. That's the best part about it.
Yeah.
So, Justin, I'm really excited to pick your brain about DFS, and we're going to get to that. So, listeners, stay tuned. But first, we're going to start with news of the week. And the big news is that the Pirates are back. They did lose last night with Tyler Glasnow on the mound. And, you know, he didn't look so bad, but they were against a Cardinals lineup that's been pretty good this season. So, the Pirates are back. They're not leading the wild card right now, but they sure are hot. They've got a few pieces coming back. And, Justin, what do you think? Are they going to make the playoffs, overtake the Mets and Dodgers?
I think they might. Yeah, I think Glasnow is really good. I mean, he didn't look great in his debut, but that's normal. And he's the number 8 overall prospect, so I don't think you can discount him after one start. So I would say they have a good chance to make a run.
Plus, they have to worry about a rain delay with him, which is always tough.
Right, yeah, it's such a terrible way to have your debut. I felt bad for him. And I don't know if you saw, his dad almost caught a foul ball while being interviewed during the game.
It was insane. That is amazing.
It went right to him. He just dropped it. And during the interview, right after he dropped it, he said, that person is not leaving with that ball. So he was determined to go get it. But what are the odds of that?
Yeah, that's a pretty cool story. Yeah, I like the Pirates. I'd say right now they're my NL favorite to win a wild card. I don't think they're going to quite catch the Cubs, but I'm really impressed with the Pirates roster. Plus, McCutcheon really hasn't started hitting. And once he does, it's going to be like trading for an all-star bat.
Yeah, one thing that's interesting about McCutcheon, I don't think we've rostered him in DFS all year. And I don't even think I rostered him once last year. And somehow he's regarded as such a good player. But every time I look at his numbers, I'm not impressed at all. He's always priced as though he's as good as Mike Trout or Bryce Harper in DFS.
I'm not buying that.
No, I just, none of his pitch values are particularly good. None of his splits are particularly good. I mean, he's a very solid player. I think it's somehow he's been overhyped to the point where he can't meet expectations anymore.
Yeah, he's a five-tool player, and that's exciting for baseball, but it's not great for DFS. And he plays half his game in Pittsburgh, which is just death for right-handed hitters.
Right, yeah, that's a huge disadvantage for him. So when he goes on the road, he's worth considering, but then they usually jack his price up so much because he's no longer at PNC. So
that's right.
But yeah, as far as the actual baseball player goes, he's useful for the Pirates.
So the next big news of the week, as far as I'm concerned, is that Johnny Cueto got his 13th win, which is the best before the All-Star break since 1993. And it got me thinking, just how many wins today would it take to really impress you?
Oh, man. I don't know. I mean, I'm very impressed by Cueto. I am. I mean, one thing about wins is that you can't really impress me with any amount of wins because it's so lucky.
Yeah, it just doesn't matter, does it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just totally irrelevant. Like, if your bullpen hangs on to it, the Giants have a decent bullpen. They have a pretty good offense. So it makes sense that Cueto would be in position to possibly have that. I mean, I would expect 8 or 9 from him. So, I mean, getting 4 or 5 extra is just a whole lot of luck.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about wins not really mattering too much. Carlos Martinez is on the best 4-game stretch of his career, and the team has 0 wins to show for it. Yeah. It's just, it's so hit or miss. So I don't know. I would be really impressed with 25 wins, and not because Cueto or whoever gets it does anything really to deserve it. I mean, you have to pitch kind of well to get a win usually.
Right.
But, you know, just the fact that that's such a big number, that it would happen in baseball, it would be a cool storyline to me, whether or not he deserved it, you know?
Right, yeah. I'd be impressed by 25, more so just impressed that it happened rather than super impressed with Johnny Cueto.
Yeah.
I'd just be like, wow, that's amazing that that happened.
Exactly. So all-star teams are out. Who are you taking with your final vote?
Ooh, I don't know. I might go with Jonathan Villar. I think that he just gets dinged because he's on the Brewers and nobody cares about the Brewers at all. But he leads the league in steals. He has an on-base percentage of .380. Every time I watch him play, I think he's really impressive. But I don't think he got any chatter for being on the All-Star team.
Two guys I'd be voting for. You got to take Jake Lamb out of Arizona. I mean, he's leading the league in OPS. I don't care that he plays in Arizona. He's leading the league in OPS.
Right, which
he's
is
not on the All-Star team.
Yeah, and that's probably the best stat. We use that for DFS most frequently. So to be leading in the most important offensive stat and not make the All-Star game is pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's absurd to me. And I understand the fan vote. He's not a big name yet. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But in the American League, the guy I'd go with is Evan Longoria. And, you know, he hasn't really had that exceptional of a season, but he has a big name. This is probably going to be his last chance to get in the All-Star game. And he's been great for baseball. I'd like to see him get on that roster.
Yeah, I could see that. A little bit of like the Derek Jeter thing where you just toss the guys on as they're ending. Kobe making the All-Star game, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So the Cardinals are derailed by injuries. They lost Johnny Peralta, Matt Carpenter, and Brandon Moss. Carpenter and Moss are two of the top 15 hitters in the National League so far this season. And it got me thinking, with all these guys being hurt, Colton Wong's going to start getting plate appearances again. Randall Grichuk's going to start getting plate appearances again. Would you pick any of those guys up?
I don't know. I mean, Colton Wong offers a lot of flexibility on a fantasy roster because he can play a lot of different positions. They sent him down to the minors to learn how to play center field. So now with Carpenter's injury, he'll probably go back to second base. He should see a lot of playing time. He's had home run pop as well as stolen base upside in the past, but he's been bad this year. Probably worth picking up and stashing. And I don't think Grichuk is worth picking up. They changed the way that he holds the bat. I don't know if you've seen before and after he got sent out of the minors. He used to hold the bat really flat and out, and now he holds it straight up in the air. And I'll believe it when I see it if that works. I don't know if I want to pick up a guy who just completely changed his swing in the middle of the season.
I don't like that stuff. Don't change his swing in the middle of the season. I mean, you look at what the guy did last year. He was top 3 in slugging percentage in the National League. Let the guy bat.
I know.
Stop messing with these guys.
The Cardinals do a good job with their farm system, but it's sometimes I think they over-tweak it. I mean, the guy goes on, he's, like you said, last year, fantastic, goes on a little cold streak, and all of a sudden they have to reconstruct his whole swing. That might be a bit of an overcorrection that they might regret later on.
Yeah, you're paralyzing yourself by overanalyzing all this. And like, I mean, come on, you're getting in the guy's head. Let him go up, see the ball, hit the ball. I don't understand what they're doing. As a Cardinals fan, I don't like it. I don't think it's going to work for Grichuk, but they're just in his head so much right now. He's a lost cause this season, as far as I'm concerned. It has nothing to do with Grichuk. It's just the way that they're handling him.
Right. I mean, once you tell the guy, well, your swing is the problem, then all of a sudden it becomes the problem. But it probably wasn't. I mean, it worked for him fine his whole life. So it's, I don't know, it's tough.
So a guy that wasn't a cold streak that's really snapped out of it is Giancarlo Stanton. He is in fuego right now. Do you think he could catch Trumbo for the league lead by the end of the season? He's down 7 right now.
No, I do not. I mean, he's good, but I don't think he's going to catch him. I mean, it's statistically probable that he will not catch him because it would just take a ridiculous hot streak. And we're not huge believers in hot streaks at Daily Fantasy Insider. I mean, guys will have a couple of games run, but I mean, to have like a month straight of hitting a home run every day, which is what Stanton could need, because it's not like Trumbo is just going to stop hitting home runs. Yeah. He's having a great year, and he's in Camden Yards.
And all the other people he has to pass up.
Right. I mean, Stan has to hit his home runs out of Marlins Park while Trumbo gets to hit in Camden. So it's totally unfair. He would have to just continuously crush the ball.
Yeah.
And I don't know. He's so prone to 0-for-4 with 3 strikeout games that I think we'll start seeing some more of those. But yeah, right now he's on fire.
To those of you listening who are thinking, wait a second, he doesn't believe in hot streaks? I mean, yeah, hot streaks do happen, but I mean, if you get enough sample sizes, there's going to be enough hits and home runs that are stringed together at some point in the season where, you know, there seems to be a hot streak, but I'm the same way. I don't believe in it. I don't think that the numbers back up hot streaks. And, you know, I'm playing Giancarlo Stanton in fantasy this week, so I kind of think he might catch him by the end of the week at the rate that he's going, but I'm the same way. I don't think Stanton's going to make up anywhere near enough ground.
Yeah, I think it's very easy to look back at game logs and say, well, this guy's on a hot streak. But it's so tough to predict going forward. And we've done a lot of research into it. And for the most part, what we found is that recent performance doesn't predict future performance. So with that in mind and him down 7 home runs, I think Trumbo's probably safe, at least from Stanton.
Exactly. All right, Justin, let's move over to the DFS slate. Who's your best cash game pitcher for tonight's FanDuel slate?
Well, we think Jose Fernandez has got to be the top cash game pitcher. His floor is so high. He strikes out so many batters, and that's exactly what you want in cash games. So even if he's giving up runs, it's not going to kill you as long as he's getting his strikeouts, which he almost always does.
Yep.
Arrieta and Kluber present very strong options also, but we just think Fernandez is the top guy.
There's always so many good pitchers on Friday night, but yeah. No, I agree. Fernandez is the guy. He's got those strikeouts. There's nobody better in the game at getting strikeouts, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, I think he's going to get that win tomorrow too, which is big.
Yeah, very likely.
Now, how about your one or two top GPP pitchers you like tonight?
So we have a few. We like Matt Shoemaker. We think that it makes sense to try to take a cheaper pitcher because there's some offenses in great spots tomorrow. So he's only 6,700 on DraftKings, 7,700 on FanDuel. He's facing one of the top offenses in the MLB with the Orioles, but they also carry a really high strikeout rate against right-handed pitchers, about 22.5%. Shoemaker faced them earlier this year, struck out 12 in 7 innings. So we think he could definitely repeat that again, and he matches up pretty well with them in most of our metrics. He's a GPP play only because Baltimore's offense could obviously knock him around. But we think that he's got some pretty high upside. And then another guy that we like is when two aces square off against each other, a lot of times people just kind of avoid it because they don't know who's going to get the win. But Strasburg and Syndergaard both face each other and are both interesting GPP options. You could really go either way. They're both elite strikeout guys, pretty good matchups. We wouldn't be surprised if this game was just kind of a quick back and forth, which really benefits both pitchers if they're not sitting on the bench for a long time. So I've seen games last 2 hours where the pitchers are just running through the opposite lineups, and that's something that could happen in that game. So both of those guys are worth considering.
I love Schumacher tomorrow. He's my guy. I don't really do cash games. You know, if I'm doing anything, it's a free roll or it's a GPP. And Schumacher is my play. He's been amazing. I mean, he's been every bit as good as Cole Hamels in the past month. And Cole Hamels has been great. Schumacher at that price, I don't care who he's playing. I don't care. I would care if he's in Coors Field, but
right.
You know, pretty much any ballpark right now, I'm taking Schumacher at that price. I think he's a great play.
Yeah, he's definitely underpriced. And like you said, we generally advise people for cash games, but we almost always just play GPPs. It's just more interesting.
Yeah. So let's move over to some of the hitters, and I want to talk about value plays, you know, guys that are under $3,000 tomorrow. So who's your infield value play tomorrow that you like?
We really like Javier Baez. He's been crushing left-handed pitching in his small MLB career so far, and he faces a lefty tomorrow who's prone to giving up home runs to righties. So it's a perfect matchup. He'll definitely be on our list of targets tomorrow.
Yeah, I love Baez. I love Baez almost every night, but especially against lefties. Now, how about your outfield value play?
We like Corey Dickerson. On FanDuel, he's 3,000 going against Sean O'Sullivan in Boston. If you follow me on Twitter, I think Sean O'Sullivan is absolutely horrible. I have literally argued with MLB players who have played with Sean O'Sullivan that tell me he's not that bad. And I will not have it. I mean, all of his stats are horrible. So he didn't get destroyed like we thought he would against the Angels last Sunday. He only gave up 2 runs in 5 innings, which I was blasted on Twitter for. That's still not a great outing, but I mean, that's good enough for him. The Angels didn't make him pay for the fastballs he was leaving up in the zone, but he was making the mistake pitches. And we think if he makes those against Dickerson tomorrow, he's got a 260 ISO against righties. He's got a 7.1 pitch value against fastballs. Yeah, we think he could crush O'Sullivan, and anybody could, but hopefully Dickerson does.
Yeah, there's been a big ballpark change from Tampa to Boston. I mean, Boston's been one of the best over the past 5 years. Tampa's been one of the worst. And, you know, Dickerson's turned it on over the last month. You look at his season stats, he hasn't been that great. But Dickerson at 3,000 in that matchup, in that ballpark, that's a good play. I like having him in my lineup tomorrow as well. Now, how about the mid-tier range? Are there one or two guys that really stand out to you there?
One of our mid-tier guys, we haven't locked him in, but he's definitely on our radar, is Justin Turner. He's facing Andrew Cashner, who's shown reverse splits pretty much all season. And he allows righties to hit for .291 average and a .528 slugging percentage. So Turner is also a reverse splits hitter. He's always been. 10 of his 12 home runs come off of right-handed pitching this year. And those stats go back for years where he's always just better against righties. So we think it could be a good situation where a lot of people are going to overlook Turner. He could be really low-owned. Anytime you've got double reverse split situation, it's worth picking for GPPs just because no one else is looking for righty-righty matchups.
All right, and then finally, who's one stud that you just have to get in your lineup that you're saving money for?
One guy who's on our radar right now is Michael Saunders for the Toronto Blue Jays. He's about to be an all-star, and he's not priced like one. He draws a matchup with an unintimidating pitcher in Mike Pelfrey, who everybody loves to target lefties against Pelfrey, and for good reason. He allows him to hit .338 this year, and he only strikes out 9% of lefties. So we're not really worried about him striking Saunders out, who's an elite hitter. And if Saunders has the ability to put the ball in play every at-bat, we think he has a pretty good chance of having a good day. He's been crushing the ball lately, and although I don't believe in hot streaks, I just think he's a really good hitter. I think he's underrated immensely, and the Toronto fans appreciate him so much that they've got him into the All-Star game. They've been wearing shirts to all these games in the last few days. The whole outfield, you should look at a picture of it if you haven't seen it, is wearing these white t-shirts with a picture of Saunders and like a Canadian flag, and they're flying Canadian flags out there. The guy's not Canadian. Like, the whole country has just totally just taken him on, like adopted him as an honorary Canadian. They love him. I mean, maybe he's Canadian and I don't know, but I've heard that he's. So, I mean, maybe he's like an undercover Canadian they only know in Toronto, but they love him there. And I think for good reason. He's been batting cleanup on a great team all year, and he's really good.
Yeah, he's really been their best player, hasn't he? I don't know. Josh Donaldson might make a case for that, but Saunders has just been so good. I can't believe it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Donaldson is better, but everybody knows Donaldson's really good. I think you hear Michael Saunders and you're like, is that the guy who used to play for, who did he play for? I don't even know. Like,
the Mariners, and he was horrible.
Right. No, yeah. I mean, that's like most people, you mention Michael Saunders and they just don't even know where he was, who he plays for now. Maybe they know he's on the Blue Jays, but I think most people are just totally unaware of how good he's been.
Yeah. Take advantage of that price while you have a chance, listeners.
For sure.
Let's move over to the waiver wire, Justin. The one guy that I think, just go pick him up now. Like, pause this episode, go pick him up before somebody else does, and that's D. Gordon. He's coming back soon. And, you know, if he's available in your league, he was a second-round pick, and he's going to steal a ton of bases in the second half. What do you think, Justin?
Oh, I think you have to pick him up if he's available. I mean, it's a no-brainer. Some people are saying, well, he doesn't do this, he doesn't do that. He was drafted in the second or third round of every draft, like you said. Just because he missed the beginning of the season doesn't all of a sudden mean he's not good. Last year, he stole 58 bases and led the NL in batting average. Steroids don't cause that. The fact that he's not going to be on steroids anymore should not affect his speed and ability to just slap the ball into the huge expanse of Marlins Park right field. So that's like the biggest right field of all time. That's why they went out and got D. Gordon, was so that he could hit the ball right there. They looked at his spray charts on the Dodgers and they said, wow, if he had our ballpark, he'd be batting 100 points higher. And he did. And it was a great move by them to go out and get him, and you should go out and get him for your fantasy team right now.
Yeah, and look, I know you're going to have to stash him on your team for a couple weeks, but you know what? It's worth it. It is worth it. He's going to be on your roster for the fantasy playoffs, and who wouldn't want that? He is a great fantasy baseball player. The next guy that I want to talk about is Max Kepler, and he's not owned in too many leagues right now, but he's on a little bit of a hot streak. He's a guy that's, you know, top 30 prospect according to Baseball America. Last year in the minors, he had more walks than strikeouts. He batted 320. He stole 19 bases. And he's only been playing baseball for a couple years. He's from Germany, and he's got a huge body. He just oozes with potential. Justin, what do you think about him for the rest of the year?
Yeah, he has insane potential. And one thing I think it's funny is that we both don't really believe in hot streaks, but when we like a pick, we just mention that they're on a hot streak.
Right?
Because we know the listener will listen to it if they're on a hot streak, and we just want them to go do the right thing. You want Max Kepler on your fantasy team. I mean, the guy, like you said, has been stealing a ton of bases, draws an insane amount of walks, and he has a ton of power. He's already hit 7 home runs. He hit another one last night. His batting average is not that high. I mean, he's probably not going to hit 300 in the majors this year, but with Miguel Sano moving over to third base and DH, Kepler is going to play almost every single day in the outfield. I mean, if you need an outfielder, Max Kepler is the guy you want.
The thing that really concerns me about Kepler, I mean, I guess there's a few things. He's not really going to get many RBI opportunities because he's on the Twins, and he's also batting at the end of that order right now. I think he's going to play himself into the 2 or 3 spot in that Twins lineup, but for right now, you know, he's only going to get 3.2 at bats per game, and I don't really like that out of my fantasy players. Right
yeah.
now, I'm not sure. He might be someone I watch and see, but like you said, if you need an outfielder, he's going to hit you home runs, and you could do a lot worse than picking up Max Kepler right now.
Yeah, you definitely could. I agree with you, though. I mean, the guy hitting at the bottom of the order, it's funny because he's probably one of their best hitters, and he's batting at the bottom of the order. And another guy that's in the same situation, Tyler Naquin, is owned in 10% of ESPN fantasy leagues. And the guy is probably the best hitter on the Indians. I mean, no one gives him any credit at all. He's hitting 320 with like 8 home runs, and he just started playing for them. It's really incredible. And he gets no love. He bats 7th every night, 8th sometimes. I'm waiting for him and Kepler to get moved up in the lineups, but sometimes the managers just think, oh, well, if I move him, then all of a sudden he'll be a terrible hitter.
Exactly.
I doubt it. Like, I really don't think so. But maybe. I mean, it's crazy that they've got like their worst hitter following their best hitter. It's just such a bad way of organizing the lineup.
Yeah. It's like I just don't get it. But at the same time, I'm not getting paid $2-3 million a year to make those decisions. So
right.
You know, if they're going to be spending that kind of money on a manager to make those decisions, he probably has an idea of what's going on. But doesn't mean I'm not going to question you. That doesn't make
yeah.
any sense.
As a sports fan, you have to question everybody who gets paid a lot more than you.
Yeah, yeah, you're
decisions.
Right. That's what makes it fun, right?
Right, exactly. You can't just sit back and accept everything, or else it's no fun.
All right, let's move over to the pitchers. Tyler Glasnow, as you know, made his debut. We already talked about that a little bit. He got rained out. Not really. Well, he didn't get rained out, but he had a delay. He didn't do as well. But we're talking about a guy who over the past 10 years has been far and away the best minor league pitcher. He's got a 2.01 career ERA in the minors. He's striking out 11 guys per 9 innings. He's 6'8". He throws a hammer curve. He's got a ton of velocity. I just feel like this is a guy, you know, a lot of rookies struggle when they come up, but this is a guy that is just so unique that when batters go up against him, they're not going to know what they're dealing with. It's just a strange release point. He's got a really unique arsenal, and I think he could be dominant from the get-go. What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, I think he is definitely MLB ready. He's been pitching in the minors for so long and dominating. I would hope that he's ready by now. And he didn't look great in his debut, like we said, but he didn't look bad. And for a guy that could really rack up strikeouts for your team, I think he's definitely worth picking up. I mean, he's the number 8 overall prospect. Like, it's not every day you can just go pick somebody up like that right off the waiver wire. So if you can get him and you need a pitcher, probably worth picking up. Even if you don't need a pitcher, it might be worth getting him and trading him in 3 weeks when he's having some good starts.
That's a good point. I was talking to Fantasy Pros correspondent Dan Marcus, who I need to get on the show. He's a really good guest on this show, but he was talking to me. He's a big Pirates fan, and he says about Tyler Glasnow, look, you look at his stats in the minors, and they look awesome, but it's really easy to miss that he has over 50 walks already. He had a streak where he went 13 innings and didn't allow a single hit, but he walked 11 guys in that time. This is a guy that, you know, he's not going to get that many innings pitched because his pitch count's going to go up. He just walks so many guys, and I'm concerned about that, but I'm still going to pick him up.
Yeah, he's wildly effective. That's how I would describe him. It's a lot like Chris Archer, where he's going to get you in some innings where he walks the bases loaded and then strikes out three guys also. I remember earlier this year, Archer had an inning where he walked a guy, struck out a guy, walked a guy, struck out a guy, walked the bases loaded, and then struck out the guy, like six batter. It was the weirdest inning. No one put a ball in play, and the inning lasted half an hour.
That's amazing.
I could see something bizarre like that happening with Glasnow, where he's getting everyone to swing and miss, but anybody who has the patience to just stand there will get on base.
Yeah. And then the final pitcher I want to talk about, this is a guy that's only owned in 1.8% of ESPN leagues, so you've probably never even heard of him. His name's Ryan Dole. He's an Oakland relief pitcher. And the reason I bring him up, if you need whip, his whip is .73. He's allowed 23 hits in 42 innings, only 8 walks. He's even struck out more than a batter per inning, and his ERA is 2.11. For a relief pitcher, he's getting a lot of innings pitched, and I just feel like this is a guy that can help your fantasy team. He's not a big name. He's not sexy. But, you know, if you need whip, he's my guy. What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, you know, it's not my job to know relief pitchers, but I do happen to know Ryan Dole because last night I really wanted Rich Hill to get the win. So I was watching the end of that game, and Dole comes in, and I was like, thank God they're using their best reliever in a situation where I need this win. And he was fantastic, of course. I think he's stranded like 40 runners in a row, which I think he's now set the all-time record for most runners.
He has not allowed anybody to score that he inherited as a runner.
Yeah, I think that's the all-time record. So how his ERA is over 2 while he hasn't allowed a single run to come in, I don't understand how that happens. That's bizarre. But yeah, I mean, right now they're using him in good situations and he likes the pressure. And if you need holds, he's great because he's just, they understand this guy will come in and end the inning. So he's just getting hold after hold every night. So yeah, if you need whip, hold, even Ks per 9, I mean, he's a little over 9. So everybody that we've talked about for the waiver wire is worth picking up. If we're talking about him right now, we've probably done some research and it's worth adding them to your team.
Exactly. You know, you also see guys like this, especially after the trade deadline on losing teams, end up in the closer role. And I'm picking up Ryan Dole in my league. I hope the guys in my league are not listening to this right now.
yeah, today but,
I like him a lot.
Yesterday I was doing a Reddit Ask Me Anything. It was the first time I'd ever done one and it was fun. I had a good time with it. But somebody asked me, who's your late round QB sleeper? And I know my friends are going to be on that. And I was so torn because I knew they were going to read it. So finally I tell them Tyrod Taylor is the quarterback you want. And my buddy texts me like 3 minutes later, thanks man, I'm taking Taylor. I was like, I don't know if that was worth it or not to help one good, help one fan and ruin my season long fantasy. I kind of regret that decision. So hopefully you get Ryan Dole before anybody else.
You know what? I've come to the point where I'm starting to think it's more fun to be someone who's well known for giving good advice and helping people than it is to win your fantasy league over friends. Like, you know, if you're giving good advice, then your friends know that you can beat them in fantasy.
That's true.
It's just really not worth your time.
That's a good point. You know? If they're just stealing all of my picks, then they shouldn't really brag too much.
Exactly, they end up
beating my team. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, all fantasy football is about is being better than your friends.
Right.
And like, if they're stealing your advice, they know that you're better than them, right?
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point.
All right. Let's jump over to the listener mailbag. This is the last segment we're going to do. And I love this segment every time our listeners ask great questions. And if you're listening, you want to ask a question, shoot me an email, bobby@fantasypros.com, or tweet me at bobbyfantasypro. First question come to us from Ryan in Vermont. And he asks, the Marlins have 6 full-time players betting over 300. With Stanton finally starting to get hot and Justin Bour, who's not betting over 300, but still carrying an 870 OPS, and then D. Gordon returning soon, could this end up being the best offense in the National League?
I mean, the only thing stopping this team is its home stadium. Even with the walls moved in, Marlins Park is ranking in the bottom half of the MLB in runs and home runs per game. I think it's just going to be tough for them to catch Rizzo, Bryant at Wrigley, or Arenado and Cargo and Coors. I mean, still, the impact of Barry Bonds and Don Mattingly has been huge, especially in the breakout year of Marcelo Zuna. He's really been something this season. I mean, he's the best hitter on that team. And he's really coming to his own under the guidance of Bonds. So I think it's funny, everybody was making fun of the whole Barry Bonds is now on the team with D. Gordon taking steroids. Like, right. Everyone was kind of just making a joke out of Bonds being there, but all of a sudden these guys are crushing the ball. So I think you might see some other famous hitters start getting reached out to by these teams as they realize that that really helped. And the hitters are giving Bonds all the credit. And with guys like Gordon and Yelich setting the table for Stan and Ozuna, the Marlins could find themselves in the playoff hunt. And let's be serious. Would you want to face Jose in a winner-take-all come October?
No, no way. Well, the thing is, he might be on an innings limit, so that we might not even get to that.
I would hope that he'll override it, but I remember he'll become a huge villain if he goes with that innings limit like Matt Harvey tried to do. And
yeah, Strasburg, yeah.
And when Matt Harvey did that, everyone hated him, and then it's like it really ruined him. Like, he was so bad. the fans were just so quick to boo him every time he'd allow a base runner and they'd start booing him. Like, I think Jose will learn his lesson from seeing that in the same division that he's in. Hopefully he took some notes and will pitch through his innings limit if they're in the playoff race.
I'm not sure that there's anyone in baseball more competitive than Jose Fernandez. There is no way he's letting any coach tell him he can't go out there.
I sure hope so. And when whatever fake effort Don Mattingly might make to tell him not to go out there, they want to win. They want to make the playoffs. Hopefully they're not pushing. The only guy that was really pushing for Matt Harvey to not play was his agent.
Yep.
So hopefully Jose can just tell his agent to cool it, and then that'll be it.
The Marlins, I was laughing really hard when I saw that they were in the wild card race a couple weeks ago. And I'm not laughing anymore. This is a team that can win the World Series. I don't think they're the favorites or anything close to that, but with that lineup and Jose Fernandez, you know, being able to pitch two games in a series, even their bullpen's really good with Ramos. They just picked up Fernando Rodney. The Marlins are good, man.
Yeah, they are. The only bad break the Marlins have caught, besides the Gordon steroids, they'll be fine from that when he comes back, is that Wei-Yin Chen is horrible now. I mean, he's always been a serviceable starter, but his like advanced metrics are even worse than his numbers are now. One thing that teams have done, in his whole career, he's gotten to face about 25% lefties. This year, he's only facing 12% lefties. People are finally realizing that he just cannot pitch to righties. So he would always get out of innings by getting out lefties. He had an amazing rate against left-handed hitters. And now people are saying, well, now he doesn't get lefties out anymore. And the reason is because they're only leaving their elite left-handed hitters in the lineup.
That's a good
point. The only lefties that he faces now are like Carlos Gonzalez. So he's just facing a bunch of righties and some elite lefties, all of which he's struggling to get out. And even with the big park, he's allowing home runs at a higher rate than he ever has before. So I think they're going to have to get rid of him or pull him out of the rotation if they're going to make the playoffs.
You know, I know the Marlins already have four really good outfielders with Stanton, Ozuna, Yelich, Ichiro, but I almost wonder,
that's generous to give Ichiro a very good outfielder.
Yeah, you're right. He's not a very good outfielder, but he is batting well over 300.
Yeah.
And, he's been solid. But what I'm wondering is, if it comes to it and they're going to make the playoffs, do you think that they might just sign Barry Bonds and let him pinch hit? I mean, you know he could do it. You know he'd be awesome.
He certainly could. That would be awesome. I would love to see that. It'd be like the Pete Rose situation where he just inserts himself into the game as a coach player.
Yeah.
I think there's actually some kind of rule because of Pete Rose that prevents a managerial position or player to come into a game.
That's
so
a shame.
They would have to fire him as a coach and then rehire him as a player, and then he would count against their roster. I don't know if they'll do it.
I'd love to see it. That's fun to speculate on a little bit. Let's jump over to the other question, and this one comes to us from Ryan in Wisconsin. This is amazing. I didn't know this. 19% of the Cubs' wins and 36% of Chris Bryant's NL leading homers have come against the lowly Reds. He wants to know, now that the Cubs are coming into a tougher stretch of their schedule, is it possible they could miss the playoffs altogether?
Oh, interesting question, Ryan. That is a good question. I don't think that they'll miss the playoffs. I think they started off with such a high winning percentage. It was inevitable that they would fall back down to earth a little bit. That's something that us statisticians like to call regression to the mean. And that was to be expected after the kind of start that they had, but they're still a fantastic ball club. And I don't think that they're really in much danger of missing out on October. Despite their recent struggles, I think they'll be fine. What do you think?
It's not going to happen. They're not going to miss the playoffs. I mean, could it happen? Of course it can happen. I mean, the Phillies could still make the playoffs, right? I'd say there's a 2% chance the Cubs miss the playoffs. And as much as I would love to see it happen, man, that would be amazing. It's not going to happen. So, you know, it's a great question. I love the stats that you threw out there. And I would love it if this race got close. I'd love it if they got swept out of the playoffs, especially in like a Steve Bartman kind of way. But I don't think they're going to miss the playoffs.
That'd be so sad for the city. I don't want to see that happen. You know, I think another thing is, I mean, the Reds are bad. Don't get me wrong, but the Reds look even worse because they've played the Cubs so many times.
Yeah.
So I think to say like, oh well, it's not fair that they just keep beating up on the Reds. They might be beating up on other teams too that are like in the bottom half of the league, and the Reds are just looking terrible because they just keep facing the best team in the MLB.
Now, this is a two-part question from Brian in Nevada. He wants to know, first of all, what we think about the All-Star fan voting and that it's paired with the home field rule, and we'll get to that. But first, I want to ask you, he wants to know, how do you think each league's starting lineup in the All-Star game should look different?
Ooh, I mean, the fan voting definitely hurts the All-Star game. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Last year, Omar Infante almost started at second base. Like, that is a travesty. I like the Royals. I flew to Kansas City for game one of the World Series. I love Omar Infante. He has no business even being near the All-Star game. He should be flown to another country before they start the All-Star game. So he can't possibly be anywhere near it. So the fact that that almost happened is just not right. People vote for their favorite players, and the best fan base is just get involved. I mean, that's how it works. And, I mean, you could talk about guys like Will Myers are not even starting and never even was close. And he's leading in war. He's leading his team in every category. I mean, he's the hometown guy, so he gets to be in the home run derby also. But people are saying it like that. Oh, well, he's the hometown guy. He's totally deserving of being in the All-Star game and being in the home run derby. And people just don't like to throw votes to people that aren't on their hometown team.
Yeah.
So that is hurting the game. If I was going to make a change to the roster, I would have to get rid of Addison Russell. And I think that's what everybody would say.
Yeah, for Corey Seager?
Yeah, for Corey Seager or for Daniel Murphy. I think you could really make a case for either one. Even Ben Zobrist can make a case because he's more qualified than Addison Russell. I mean, just because these guys, their primary position that they're always playing isn't shortstop, I think you gotta just kinda flex it like DraftKings. I mean, they're listed at second base and shortstop.
Yeah.
You should be able to flex over a good second baseman.
Or like they do in the NBA. If you have three great small forwards, you're not gonna leave them off the All-Star team.
Exactly.
I mean, let the best nine players play.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's how it should be, and that's how it is in almost every other sport. So yeah. I don't understand why the MLB is so strict on positions.
In the American League, you know, I don't really think the fans screwed any of this up too bad. You can make a case for all these guys. Russell's clearly the worst. But in the American League, if I had to get rid of someone, it'd be Eric Hosmer. He's 16th in war among first basemen. I'd probably plug Encarnacion in there. He hasn't had a great season, but he's probably been the best in the American League. There's a couple guys I'd probably take out. Like you said, Will Myers over Anthony Rizzo. Maybe Murphy based on the season he's had compared to Ben Zobrist. But, you know, I think Zobrist probably helps the NL team get home field advantage better than Murphy would. And then in the outfield, Marcell Ozuna, you already mentioned him. I'd pick him over Cespedes, and I'd pick Gregory Polanco over Dexter Fowler. But, you know, it's pretty close. I don't like that the All-Star fan voting is paired with the home field rule. What I think baseball fans would love to see, just like in the old days, is that, you know, if Joe Maddon was the manager, if he would go out there and just say, Jake Arrieta is getting the ball, and if he goes all nine innings, so what? I want home field advantage in the seventh game of the World Series, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to get it. I want the best players going up against the best players, and I don't want, you know, these 28th men on the All-Star team from, you know, the Padres or whoever it may be that has to get on the team just because of the role. I don't want to see those guys play. I want to see the best players go up against the best players.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that's kind of I don't know if it's a popular or unpopular opinion, but I don't think that Julio Teheran should get the pitch. I mean, he's had a fantastic year. I think he is one of the top three whips for all pitchers. And he is irrelevant to who should be in the World Series defend in Game 7. Yeah. Like, who should have home field? Why should he care? I mean, he's just going out there enjoying the All-Star game. And it's not his fault at all that he's not on a good team. And so that's the case for letting him be in it. But I think you have to take away the home field advantage in the World Series if you want to say that guys like that should be able to play in the All-Star game, because there's just – unless he gets traded at the deadline, which apparently Atlanta's not open to, then there's no way that he's going to have any impact, like, as far as the actual World Series goes. So why should he determine who gets game one and game seven?
I feel like he could sabotage it too. Like, if he knows he's going to the Red Sox or something, he just tosses up a fastball right down the middle.
Right. No, I mean, yeah, I was talking to one of the players that's in it was saying that there was trade rumors that he was going to switch from the NL to the AL. And I was saying, you know, maybe you should just play a terrible game. And we were joking about it, but he wouldn't do that. Everybody wants to show out in front of the whole country, because if you're on a bad team, I mean, no one's ever watched you play before. So this is your one chance to impress everybody. And I think that's hopefully everyone's just playing their best. And I don't think anybody would ever purposely play badly just for the off chance that they get traded to a team that makes the World Series. It's pretty unlikely.
You know, I would have thought you were right about 12 hours ago, but then I read what Jose Fernandez said. I don't think you probably saw this, otherwise I don't know if you would have said that. Jose Fernandez said, if I see David Ortiz in the All-Star game, I'm tossing a fat one right down the middle so he can hit it as far as he can. Because it's good for baseball, right? I mean, he just wants to entertain people, and he thinks people would like to see Ortiz hit a homer. I understand that, but I mean, the home field advantage, man.
Right. Yeah. And the fact that the Marlins actually could be in the playoffs, like, I think Jose Fernandez just has the mentality of, I'm on the Marlins, I'll never be in the playoffs. And like, he actually could. So he should really take that more seriously. I hope that's a joke.
I think it's more along the lines of he's thinking, if we make it to the World Series and get to game seven, I don't care if I pitch game six, I'm going to pitch game seven. I don't care what ballpark I'm in, I'm going to pitch a no-hitter. That's Jose Fernandez, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And he may think that, but he's a lot better at home, so he should definitely prioritize being there.
And the final question comes to us from Chad in California. This is a great question. He wants to know if you could pit any hitter and any pitcher all time against one another, and you could watch them go against one another, which two players would you choose?
So I saw this question ahead of time. You sent it over to me so that I could think about it. And I talked to my team at DFI about it. We had an interesting discussion. And we decided to go with Babe Ruth versus Chris Young in Yankee Stadium. The ball might leave the park. Like, Chris Young is the ultimate fly ball pitcher, and Ruth would just crush
him. He's horrible against lefties.
He's horrible against lefties. I mean, really, Barry Bonds against Chris Young would probably actually be more exciting. But, I mean, picking Babe Ruth is just more fun than picking a steroid user that people don't even really like. So I think it'd be more fun. I've seen Barry Bonds hit before. I've never gotten to see Babe Ruth hit, obviously. So that'd be great.
Yeah, yeah, that's a pretty good one. You know, if you want to talk about someone who hit the ball out of Yankee Stadium, the only person who's ever done it is Josh Gibson. And, you know, I thought about Josh Gibson because I would love to see just how good he was. I mean, we don't really have an idea. Supposedly he hit 900 homers against really good competition in the Negro Leagues. I mean, when the Negro Leagues had exhibition games against Major League Baseball, they had over a 600 winning percentage. There was great talent there, and Josh Gibson dominated it. So I'd love to see him against Randy Johnson, just because Randy Johnson's such a freak in nature, and who knows what he could do with him. But the matchup I'm going with is Satchel Paige and Barry Bonds. And the reason I'm going with Barry Bonds is because, you know, I don't know how great Ted Williams was. I can look at the stats, but I've seen Barry Bonds play. I can get a reference for Satchel Paige by seeing him go against Barry Bonds. And the player I most want to understand is Satchel Paige. I mean, look, he did play in the majors, but we didn't get to see him at his prime. At his prime, he may have been the best pitcher of all time. He had so many wins, and he pitched almost every day. He had six pitches he could locate. He threw a blazing fastball. He was super competitive. I would love to see Satchel Paige, and I'm really sad that I didn't get to. I'm really sad that people back then didn't get to, because he was a really special talent.
Yeah, yeah, that would be cool. We really considered picking like one of the great all time pitchers against one of the great all time hitters, but then we decided that the at bat is likely just to end in like a pop out or something. You know, it's just like it's just like two just elite powers going against each other, and I don't think it's going to end with either a strikeout or a home run. It's probably just going to be a boring at bat. I mean, Bonds against Chris Young, you're going to see bombs. Like, if you get to see a couple of pitches, I think he'll crush one, and that'd just be more exciting.
Yeah.
But I agree that seeing Satchel Paige would be awesome.
If you want to talk about exciting, how about Yordano Ventura against Ty Cobb? I mean, Ty Cobb was a big old racist, and Yordano Ventura, as we know, will throw at anyone.
Right.
Ty Cobb would have charged the mound with, like, a couple of machetes or something.
Yeah, no, yeah, he definitely would have brought the bat with him for sure.
Yeah.
it would have been interesting. I don't know if I want to put Yordano Ventura in that dangerous of a situation, so I don't think I would pick that just for that reason.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned how the Negro Leagues would beat the MLB teams, because we would we learned about that in our – I took a history of baseball class at UNC Chapel Hill, and it was an awesome class. I actually really learned a lot, despite what – it sounds like one of those classes that the athletes sign up for and no one attends. It was actually a really good class. And we learned about how Jackie Robinson really kind of ruined the Negro Leagues, because integration in baseball just put so many black baseball players out of a job. Because it's like once they shut down the Negro Leagues,
yeah,
there's not room in Major League Baseball for almost all of them. So the rest of them just kind of lost their jobs, while a few of them made it to the MLB. And not that – I mean, it's something that had to happen. You know, eventually that was going to need to occur for integration to happen successfully. Would have to be those speed bumps to get rid of the Negro Leagues. But it's too bad, because there were some really amazing players that kind of just got washed away.
You know, the really amazing thing about Jackie Robinson is, I mean, you look at him, he's a Hall of Famer, and he's not just a Hall of Famer for what he did coming into the league, but he's a Hall of Famer because he was so good. I mean, he won an MVP. He was one of the best players in baseball for a long period of time. And the amazing thing about him is baseball was his third or fourth best sport. I mean, he could have been an all-star basketball player. He might have ended up being the best football player of all time. And he could have been an Olympic track athlete. He was an incredible athlete.
Oh, I know. He was so good at football. It's disappointing that he left football. I mean, obviously, what he did for baseball is great. But just as far as watching a true talent, it would have been exciting to watch him play football, watch his highlights.
You know, I wonder if someday we're going to get to see a guy who's better than Bo Jackson, better than Deion Sanders, you know, who can come in and truly be the best player in multiple sports.
If LeBron played football, I think we would have seen it already.
Yeah,
but he doesn't want to do that, destroy his body. I don't blame him. But if he did, I think he'd be the best tight end of all time.
That is entirely possible. I'd love to see something like that. I love these speculative questions where you switch sports for the athletes and
right,
think about them. I love all these fun questions.
There are highlights of LeBron playing pickup football, and he's incredibly good. It's not like it's like, oh, like he's athletic and tall, he'd probably be good. Like, he just catches the ball one hand, Odell Beckham style, just easily. His hands are huge. I mean,
yeah,
he has everything that you would perfectly script out for really any sport, but particularly tight end in football. He'd be so good.
All right, Justin. Well, that's all the questions we have. I wish I could talk to you about all this baseball history and speculative questions for another hour, but we've got to run for this week. And Justin, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That's all we have for you on the show this week. Please be sure to tune in next week for what's sure to be another great show. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your baseball. I just wanted you to watch me just